I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, and welcome to Radio Motherboard. I am Jason Kebler, and I've got Samantha Cole.
Hi.
And Liara Rue.
Hey.
Hey. I'm really excited about this episode. Sam, do you just kind of want to tee this up since you've been talking to Liara for a couple months now? I think it started with the Patreon stuff back in December, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been working together on stories for quite a while now, almost since my beginning at Motherboard full-time. So Liara has been a really great resource as far as the world of sex work and that community. They are an independent porn creator and producer, and just a really great organizer, activist, awesome at connecting people, which is something that we've both worked on together quite a bit. So yeah, we decided to have Liara on today because everyone is kind of coming off the heels of this big weekend where sex workers descended on their respective cities, and especially Washington, D.C., to advocate and demonstrate and lobby for sex work rights. So that was a pretty big deal, and I think pretty historic. I think it's the first time that it's been that large of an event around sex worker rights nationwide. So yeah, that's why we decided to ask you on today, Liara. And yeah, do you want to just kind of start by telling folks a little bit about yourself, what you do in your own words?
I am a sex worker. So I do in-person work, and I also do porn. I also write for, I guess I've written for Motherboard actually, and a couple other places. I do a lot of sex work advocacy. I've started to get more involved, after, Patreon started shutting down sex workers' accounts. And I'm really excited to see where the movement is going.
Was your advocacy around Patreon sort of the first time that you had delved into the advocacy work about, you know, getting better treatment for sex workers both online and then more recently with Sesta Fosta, which we'll talk about legally speaking?
Yeah, I had given like financial donations to organizations before, but I'd never really done any sort of advocacy specifically around sex work before. I felt like, because I was on Patreon, it was something I could sort of speak up about. And it felt like no one else was doing anything. So it seemed important for someone to stand up for all the creative, sex workers who are using Patreon.
Yeah. So can you just take us back to that moment? Like what did Patreon do and what is the situation like now? Because I know that there was a lot of organizing soon after they announced that they were going to be stricter about what was allowed on the platform. So I know you're instrumental in organizing there. Like, what is the situation like right now?
Patreon, after we worked with them a little bit, agreed that they would work really closely with creators to make sure that they weren't just shutting down people's accounts without any sort of recourse, which has been really good for some people whose fan bases were more interested in just giving them money and weren't as concerned about the rewards. But for other people, because Patreon is still banning porn, they've lost like a massive source of income, which is really upsetting. I think Patreon really should have tried harder in this case to really advocate for sex workers, because no one else is really doing that. No other major companies are doing that.
Yeah, I guess it's at least good there's been some movement there, but yeah, that's pretty disappointing to hear. It's been a tough, at least from just reading Sam's reporting and the people that she's talked to, it seems like it's been a particularly bad few months for sex workers, especially online. Sam, do you want to talk about some of your reporting?
Yeah, sure. So in, I guess it was March and April, this bill came through the House and then was passed into law called FOSTA-SESTA, which most people have probably heard something about by now and might not be totally up on what exactly it is. But it is a bill, or I guess now a law, that makes websites more liable for what people say and do online. And it's aimed at, or people said it was aimed at ending human trafficking and sex trafficking. But the problem with the law is that it catches consensual sex workers up in that and punishes websites for allowing them to talk and gather and share information that's really vital to their survival. So that happened, that passed overwhelmingly. And we've seen immediate repercussions from it. People are no longer able to vet clients online as easily as they maybe could, or using the same platforms that they could before. It's not the same for everybody, obviously, but a lot of those resources are now gone for sex workers, and it's pushing them back out onto the streets, or it's making it harder for them to be safe when they are using online resources. So that's what everyone is dealing with now in that community. I'm sure, Liara, you could speak more to that, but
yeah,
everyone that I've spoken to has just kind of been like, this is the worst that it's ever been. It's unbelievably bad and very scary. So yeah, do you want to kind of tell people about that a little bit and what it's been like in the aftermath now that we're a couple months into post-SESTA life?
I think it's really important to note that people who are most affected by SESTA-FOSTA are people who are already in marginalized communities. For example, I'm like a white privileged person who's, you know, skinny and everything. So my business hasn't been too severely impacted yet. But one of my friends who is a undocumented trans person of color basically isn't getting new clients at all anymore. And so she really has to like rely on like her regulars because she's not getting any new clients, which creates this unfortunate dynamic where it makes it a lot harder for her to fire any clients that aren't good, aren't respectful. And I think you're just seeing this effect where people are a lot are very worried about losing further resources, and so are taking more clients that just aren't quite as safe. They're taking more risks, and I think you know, people have already died as a result of this legislation, I think it would be fair to say, and it's just really it makes me so angry.
Can we talk a little bit about the framing of SESTA-FOSTA? Like, when, because this passed overwhelmingly, and as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this was sort of pitched as a way of like shutting down Backpage, which was an online classifieds website where a lot of sex workers, you know, got their clients and vetted clients as well. And a lot of the rhetoric surrounding Sesta Fosta was sort of came from politicians who said, you know, there is, you know, child trafficking going on Backpage, and we need a law like this to stop it, even though so many sex workers, consensual sex workers, were using it to vet clients and to sort of remain safe. But then Backpage was shut down before Sesta Fosta became a law. So that was all sort of a bunch of nonsense. And then we've seen all sorts of like collateral damage coming after that. Did I get the sort of basic timeline and rhetoric right there, or is there more to it?
Yeah. When I spoke with Reva Price, who is an aide for Nancy Pelosi, when I was lobbying on June 1st, she said that when we brought up Sesta Fosta for the first time when we were talking with her, that she had no idea that it was really sex work related at all. She was sort of blown away. It was really framed as something that was just preventing child sex trafficking, and no one really had any idea that the language of the bill had been rewritten to like focus on prostitution. And it was really upsetting that such a harmful bill had been pushed through so quickly without giving sex worker advocates a real chance to push back.
There have been some immediate repercussions. I think the most visible one that I remember just as sort of like a casual observer was Craigslist just shut down its personal site immediately. And that's probably that's a website that everyone has interacted with in some way. But there have been a lot of other probably less visible ones. And I don't know if you want to talk about some of them or if that is something that is sensitive information. I'm not really sure. But what sorts of like actions have we seen post Sesta?
I think we've seen more sex workers having their accounts shut down on different sites. Probably because the companies are worried about repercussions from Sesta Fosta. Some of these sites had already been shutting down sex workers and started doing it more aggressively. I honestly went back when Patreon started shutting down sex workers' accounts. I thought, you know, this was a while before it passed, but I thought it might have something to do with Fosta Sesta because it seemed it was just all of a sudden all these tech companies started shadow banning, like Twitter started shadow banning sex workers, and Instagram started banning different hashtags and being a little more stringent about shutting down sex workers' accounts. And I think even before the bill was voted on, it was starting to have an effect.
As an observer, someone who's just editing Sam's stories and sort of watching this happen online, it seems like there's a lot of confusion about whether an action that an online platform takes against sex workers or takes against a service that sex workers use or something like that, there's a lot of confusion about whether it is strictly Sesta Fosta related. And I think that's part of what makes this so upsetting is that they, you know, they're private companies, they can shut down things for whatever reason they want. And it seems like a lot of companies are probably taking steps that they don't need to take to comply with the law that is harming people, but that could be interpreted as being because of Sesta Fosta. But you can't say that for sure because maybe this activity isn't actually banned by the language of the law or something like that. Is that something that you've experienced in that community as well, that there is confusion about why some of these actions are happening? Or is it, I guess on some level, it doesn't even really matter. But when you talk about fighting back against it, I'd imagine that maybe it does matter the reason why things, these services have been taken away.
Yeah, I would agree that the effects of Sesta Fosta are extremely amorphous. And it's difficult to tell whether a company is taking action because of stigma against sex work, like they just don't want to ruin their brand, or if they're worried about legal repercussions or something else entirely. I do think a lot, like I have heard from people who, like different sites have taken down things and said that it's specifically about Sesta Fossa, like Craigslist, and a couple sites that provide resources to sex workers that I don't want to name specifically because it could lead to them being further targeted. But yeah, it's really frustrating to just like not really know why something is being taken away from you. But I think having legislation that criminalizes some aspect of sex work adds to the stigma of sex work. And so I do think even if something is perhaps not immediately related to Sesta Fosta, I think that laws being made that criminalize sex work make companies less likely to want to touch it just in general.
So let's talk a little bit about the lobby day. Sam, you've been talking to some sex workers who are there. Liara, obviously you were there as well. But Sam, what have you been hearing about, you know, how this was organized, how it went, that sort of thing? And and you've definitely commissioned some pieces that are have run on Motherboard or are going to run on Motherboard the rest of this week. So you've talked to a couple of people. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've been hearing from sex workers who are there? And then we'll talk to Liara about their experience there.
Yeah, sure. So the lobby day happened on June 1st in DC. So I think from what I heard, it was like 40-ish sex workers and advocates went down to DC and just decided to organize and show up and talk to their representatives on Capitol Hill, which is really awesome and really cool that they were able to do that. I believe it was organized by the Sex Workers Outreach Project and Survivors Against SESTA, but it was kind of this big mass effort of let's all go down and, you know, state our case, put ourselves in front of these people that voted for something that puts our lives in danger. It's like Liara said with Nancy Pelosi, like it's mind-boggling that they maybe just didn't even bother to look into this bill before they passed it into law. And think about the repercussions that it could have and didn't talk to sex workers and actual people who would be affected. So this was a day to just get out there and make their voices heard. So, yeah, I would love to hear more from Liara about that because you were actually there. What was it like being there? What was kind of the vibe, I guess? It seemed really exciting and empowering. But tell me more about your experience and who you talked to maybe and what their responses were.
Just being in a room with so many sex workers who are doing advocacy work was a really powerful thing in and of itself, I think. I hadn't really had a chance to be involved in that sort of thing before. And I think just seeing all these people gathered, really wanting to make a change and help their community was really amazing. And yeah, it was, I only ended up talking to people at Nancy Pelosi's office because she's in the Capitol building. And so it was kind of far away from where the other meetings were taking place. And I am a San Francisco constituent, so it made the most sense for me to talk to her directly. And yeah, it was just like I think, you know, like there had never been a sex worker lobbying day before at all. And I think once we start making our voices more heard and start advocating more for ourselves, more powerful change will really be possible.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Were staffers and representatives receptive to taking meetings with you and the other people who were there? Or was this something that you sort of had to fight just to get an audience?
No, they were very receptive about wanting to meet with us. Yeah, it was, I think they're always, most staffers are usually eager to meet with constituents, especially when, you know, they're coming from a relatively like well-organized place. and I think Kate Dalmo, who was running the sex worker lobby day, did an amazing job of making sure everything went smoothly and was done professionally.
One thing that I find disheartening about this whole, about Sesta Fosta, is that we've seen time and time again over the past couple decades that any laws governing the internet are always written very broadly and then are sort of misapplied or used to go after marginalized people or used to go after free speech or things like this on the internet, used to expand surveillance, things like that. And often we see, you know, you have groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation or and all these other like ACLU, other groups, and they speak out sort of vehemently about the fact that these laws are written so broadly and can be misapplied. And around Sesta Fosta, there was some of that, but I think probably because it involved a group that is often marginalized and vilified by the media and by just society, I guess, as well as the fact that it was sort of named after child sex trafficking, sort of like flew through without the same type of outrage that we saw around bills and laws like CISPA or even something like net neutrality or laws that were designed to allow broadband companies to sell your personal data and stuff like that. It's certainly great that they're taking meetings now, but I'm wondering, like, the tone and tenor of this sort of thing. Like, there has been a lot of outrage and there's been a lot of reporting about the unintended effects of Sesta Fosta, or, you know, perhaps they were intended, but the damaging effects of it. And I'm curious, do the lawmakers seem like they want to fix this?
I think politicians are usually going to try to make their constituents happy, which, you know, I think is sort of the point of a democracy. And I think we as sex workers need to really do a lot to make sure that communities that these people are representing do know about what's happening to sex workers and sort of change the narrative about what is happening. I think that sex or that politicians do respond positively to sort of like concrete facts and statistics about what these laws are causing to happen. I think, you know, mentioning that criminalization of sex work drastically increases HIV transmission rates and increases homicide rates, stuff like that, is just like really valuable information. And I think that people are starting to pay more attention to it.
Do you know what a Sesta Fosta fix would look like, short of sort of an entire repeal? Like, is there a piece of legislation that, you know, the people who lobbied there are working on or want to work on that would restore some of the sites that have been taken down post Sesta Fosta? Or is it something where a fix is still being worked on?
I think a fix is still being worked on. No one really, all the people that I talk to who are more involved in like organizing around legislative sex worker advocacy, they didn't see this coming. It was pushed through extremely quickly without really giving people a chance to, you know, set up meetings with lawmakers at all. And I think, yeah, people are still struggling to figure out how exactly to combat it, just because it did come pretty much out of nowhere. Someone did say something really funny about sex trafficking bills in general. I think the exact quote was, sex trafficking bills are like teddy bears. Everyone wants one.
Yeah, and the way it was phrased is definitely, I mean, Jason made the comparison to like bills like net neutrality and things like that. And there's nothing like, net neutrality made people mad, but it wasn't immediately like an emotional response. Like, oh, with this, it's like, oh, we have to save the children, which is a line that, you know, has been used time and time again, like do it for the children. But to push these things through that actually are going to be bad for us in the long run. So yeah, I think you're totally right that it was easy for them to get behind something where the name was so cut and dry, and sex trafficking or whatever the title was of the actual law. And it's like an easy win for them probably in their eyes. And now that it's actually passed into law, they're probably realizing that maybe it wasn't what they thought. Yeah, that's kind of the feeling that I got reading other people's experiences with the lobby day, that they were surprised that people and staffers were unaware that this was happening.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying. Did you attend any of the, you attended one of the protests or the demonstrations here in New York, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I was only there for a little bit. So I actually ended up leaving before the speakers started talking, unfortunately. But everyone I talked to who went said it was an incredibly moving experience. And that it just felt like while I was there, not even everyone had shown up yet. I think eventually there were 400 people at the protest in New York. And it just felt so amazing to be surrounded by members of my community, some of whom I recognized, some of whom I didn't. And it felt really amazing to have everyone come together and to have allies there too who are interested in supporting us. I think moments of solidarity like that are just so important for morale and for just like disseminating information about what criminalization of sex work does to the community.
It seemed like a lot of fun. I was having, I was definitely wishing that I was there.
Yeah.
It seemed like a really, like a joyful time all around.
Liara, do you feel comfortable talking about the piece that you wrote for Motherboard a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, totally.
Sam, do you want to frame it since you worked with Liara on the piece?
They approached me to do this coming out essay, which I was really honored that they would come to us with that. And it was basically a coming out story for Liara being a sex worker to their family, also coming out as trans and to like all of their clients, which is a big deal. And that was the basis of the essay, and I think they did a really good job handling that and all the nuances that go into that. So yeah, I'd love to hear more about the response to that after you put it out. Yeah, as much as you want to get into that, kind of the motivation behind it, what it was like writing it, pretty much all of that stuff.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned this in the piece, but I definitely cried a lot while writing it. It was definitely a very emotional piece for me to write. When I put it on my Twitter, the response was sort of overwhelming. People also felt really moved by it, and a lot of people who had been considering coming out to their parents or had already come out to their parents felt like it really like spoke to their experiences. And I got a lot of people encouraging me, like saying like, oh, like, you know, I'm sure your mom must be so proud of you. Like just an outpouring of support, basically. I did send it to my mom. and her response was sort of lukewarm. She was like, yes, I still love you. I wish you were doing something else, but you know, you have to choose your own path. And I wish she could be as proud and excited of my work as I am, but you know, it's never going to be a perfect situation.
One part of the essay that I found to be really interesting and something that I hadn't thought a lot about is the fact that you came out as well as someone who is sort of in a happy relationship, and how that sex workers are often feel compelled to keep their personal lives private. Just even the fact that they have, you know, their own relationships, their own sort of personal lives. Can you just talk a little bit about why that was so hard, or what the sort of perception is when a sex worker or a porn performer has, you know, a happy life outside of their job?
I think some fans like to really fantasize about being in a relationship with whatever sex worker they happen to favor. And knowing that the person has a partner can sort of destroy that illusion for them. And so when I started working, I was really concerned about whether or not clients would, whether or not knowing that I had a partner who wasn't paying for my time would make them feel uncomfortable, would make them feel as though they were less somehow or not important to me. So I chose to keep it private for a while. But eventually I realized, I think I have really supportive and amazing clients in general. And as I started opening up more about my personal life, they were really supportive and just like happy that I had someone. There were clients earlier in my career who after, I had this one client who actually was like completely convinced that we were in a relationship and that I was like madly in love with him. And I liked him, but it was just work for me. And he actually found my OkCupid, and then I linked to my partner on my OkCupid. And after that, he just like completely lost his shit. Basically, and became really abusive towards me. Luckily, only through like online modalities. But yeah, it was really and so I think that experience, which happened within the first year that I was working, really made me feel extremely cautious about opening up to clients about my personal life. But now I've gotten to the point where most of my clients are basically close friends, anyways, if not more than that. And so it feels really freeing to be able to talk about both my personal life and hear about their personal lives as well. And I think it's important, too, that partners of sex workers are often criminalized. I think especially in like the Nordic model, which is often promoted by prohibitionists, it makes it so that anyone who is living off the proceeds of a sex worker is de facto, like, to be crude, pimping them out, which is just blatantly untrue. And I think, you know, some of my friends who do sex work have partners who are really sick and are going through something and are actually unable to work. And describing them as being pimped or abused by this partner is just, it's extremely fucked up. And I think, you know, so by being open about having a partner, it does sort of put my partner in danger, which is upsetting but true.
Do you think that this essay and coming out like this will help in your advocacy work? Like, it, on some level, and obviously you've been doing the advocacy work for a few months now, if not longer, but on some level, maybe this makes you a little bit more public in terms of just putting yourself out there as, I am going to do this advocacy work and I'm not going to be ashamed of doing it, or I'm not going to apologize for doing it. Do you think that it will make it easier for you to do this sort of work moving forward?
It was definitely very freeing to put this information out there. It felt like a lot of people sort of knew about it, and I had been sort of dropping hints on my Twitter about the fact that I was married and everything. But yeah, I think it's going to be really helpful for my advocacy work to have, to just be more open about what my life is actually like. And I think an important part of advocacy work is humanizing sex workers. And so showing that I lead, you know, not a, I don't really lead a normal life, but I like have friends, I have family, like I'm not like completely alien and unlovable. And I think that's important for beginning the process of humanizing sex workers in the eyes of the public.
How do you see sort of the industry and community changing as you move forward? Like, what are some of your goals here? And I guess, what do you hope to see as this advocacy work continues?
I think Survivors Against SESTA, which was formed as a response to SESTA passing specifically. So it was more of a crisis organization. But they have done really amazing work in just like giving people a chance to actually do advocacy work. I think before there were organizations that were more focused on like local chapters or more like direct aid volunteering, which is more time intensive and less easy to commit to. And I think just having a like easier, more flexible, easier to connect with on the internet advocacy group is going to be really important for our community moving forward. I think we have a lot to learn, especially from Black Lives Matters activists. I think they've done, activists and organizers, they've done some really amazing work. You know, there is the Ferguson protest, which sort of sparked the movement. And then they've done a really amazing job, like taking that energy and sort of transforming it into this really powerful movement. And I think the same thing needs to happen with sex work. So I'm looking forward to being a part of that change.
How can people who want to be supportive but aren't, don't know any sex workers, or don't know if they know any sex workers, are sort of new to this whole conversation, people who want to be allies, how can they help?
I think just educating yourself about sex work in general is really important. I think Playing the Whore by Melissa Gerard Grant is a great book just about sex work. That's pretty approachable and does a good job of explaining why advocating for sex workers is important. And then, you know, if someone around you makes a shitty joke about dead sex workers or something, just calling them out, saying, hey, that was really inappropriate. Sex workers are people, you know. And I think, you know, sex workers are paid for their time. If you feel like you want to learn directly from someone, I'm sure like paying someone their rate to sort of talk about their lives and ask them how you can help them and do better work for them is, you know, something that's definitely an option too. Yeah, I think educating and sharing that information with others is definitely going to be hugely important over the coming years, and giving money financially to sex work organizations.
Thank you so much for doing this advocacy work. Thank you for writing for us, and thank you for being so visible at a time when it's really needed.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm Jason Kebler. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm here with Samantha Cole and Liara Rue. We will be back on Tuesday. So you can listen to us on any podcast app, iTunes, we're Radio Motherboard, and I guess we are signing off.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.